we'll be spending the second part of this survivorship episode with Dr. Winter Stone. They share an illustration of how much exercise affects cancer treatment, along with some resources that provide information and opportunities to engage in research and support services.
I ended up coming to work for a professor at OHSU. She was an oncology nurse scientist. So she was an oncology nurse who went on to get her PhD in do research. She was also a cancer survivor, had cancer at 24.
Wow.
But she was an athlete. And when she was going through her cancer treatment at 24, because she was an active person, an athlete, she would, when she was getting her infusion, she would take her infusion pole and walk around the unit during her infusion, whereas other people in the room were sitting down and getting that infusion.
Right.
And she noticed that she was doing, had fewer symptoms, wasn't as tired, didn't have as much nausea, you know, a lot of the acute things that people experience.
Okay.
As the people in the chairs. And that kind of struck her, and she did her PhD work trying to understand how exercise might help control symptoms for people during cancer. And it was a total no-no at the time to ask people getting cancer treatment to exercise, because cancer treatment is really tiring. And so the worry was, why would you have them do something that tires them out?
Even more, right.
Even more, because now they're going to quit their cancer treatment.
Right.
But the opposite is true. So by staying active, people can actually better manage their symptoms, actually think they can get more treatment. And if you get more treatment, then there's a better chance that your cancer treatment is going to be successful.
Okay.
And so I came to work with her to look at more long-term effects. And I'll tell you one quick story that like changed my life. And so I was doing a study in young women with breast cancer. So breast cancer is one of the types of cancer that can strike early. And I used to do these tests that took a long time. So I would talk with women. And I remember a young woman with young children telling me that about a letter that she, a goodbye letter that she was writing to her children in the shower because she was scared she was going to die. And I had little babies at home. And I thought, oh, this is where I'm going to stay. Because she looked like me. I mean, that could easily have been me on the other side on any given day. And so it shattered my assumptions about who gets cancer. It also opened up my eyes about how much work we needed to do to help people, you know, not have to continue to suffer from lack of information or lack of resources after they go through something so difficult as cancer. And so I haven't left since. An obligation. I also feel a tremendous amount of kind of admiration and respect for anybody who's had to go through getting a potentially life-ending diagnosis of having to face all of that and having to go through all the treatment. And so many people that I meet are so positive and upbeat and inspiring. They're not angry. I would be angry.
Life.
And they have found a way to either, you know, to cope with their cancer. They've made life changes because of their cancer. And so I just feel so in awe of, you know, how they've gone through and kind of coped with something so difficult.
Yeah.
I want to help them.
Could you talk about some of the things that people may have to, that may present as a challenge and expect it to be like, you know, the worst thing that could possibly happen in addition to being diagnosed? How it may not be exactly what we think it is.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately right now it's not enough. So that's the area that I work in, is in cancer rehabilitation and trying to help people make behavior change that helps them recover, and maybe the ideal, they feel better after cancer than they did before they got their cancer. Like if we really have the time and the care that we can spend with people. I think a couple of things happen that we could do better on. One is that I think sometimes people develop physical and even emotional like symptoms and side effects from cancer treatment that don't resolve magically when the treatment ends. So I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, women with breast cancer who've gone through mastectomy, you know, and then a lot of additional treatment after that, they can feel what their bodies betrayed them. Mm. And then when you're encouraged to move your body and exercise and get active, you're mad at your body for betraying you.
Mm-hmm.
You might have other, you're deconditioned because so tired from cancer treatment. Developed. There's a symptom called neuropathy where people get tingling and numbness on their hands and feet. So now it feels scary to walk up and down stairs,
mm-hmm.
and feel the stairs under your feet. And so it becomes challenging to either go back to the activity you did, or maybe you didn't do a lot of activity and you're being encouraged to start activity.
Yeah.
And you've got all these other things going on. So we really need to work on increasing knowledge and education and training for individuals who are out in the community to work with people with cancer. So one thing that was done, the YMCA developed a program called Live Strong at the YMCA, and it was a way to widen their programming for people with cancer so that they kind of had a trusted place to go.
Okay.
To get more active. And that's what we need to really kind of expand so that, you know, we're able to better care for people and help them kind of through that challenge, so that they can get more active and get the activity that they need.
Mm.
You know, sometimes it's said that their cancer may present a window of opportunity for people.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's they know they needed to make some lifestyle changes, didn't really have quite the motivation, and cancer's the thing that kind of kicked them over the line.
Yeah.
Like, it's now or never.
Yeah. When you talk about challenges once they're diagnosed, I know for a lot of us, the challenge is getting diagnosed. We don't want to come in and have that conversation. It's often a scary conversation, or, you know, in preparation for just everything we've heard has always been about the negative outcomes of being diagnosed. And I've been really, really relieved to hear, especially with a lot of the interviews we've been doing as part of this series, mm-hmm. that the research and development in the tech fighting cancer right now has moved forward so much that with early detection, there are so many different ways to beat this, and the rate of survival has gone up.
Yes. Yeah, so I would say no longer is it the case when people should think that the word cancer is an automatic death sentence.
Right.
So the needle has shifted, like you said, due to early detection, better treatments, and it means people can live longer, better, high quality lives,
mm-hmm.
long after their cancer diagnosis.
Right, right.
So a lot of our efforts, you know, in concert with the folks who are trying to move the needle so that we get cancer earlier, because definitely the earlier you catch the cancer, the better your odds are at surviving the cancer. And also it might mean the less amount of treatment that you have to have.
Right.
But we want to make sure that you don't regret finding out that you had cancer. You don't regret being treated for cancer because it ruined your quality of life or made things worse. We want to make sure, and it's our duty to make sure that, you know, you don't have decisional regret and that you have the resources and the support that you need long term. I think one of the challenges we have to meet is knowing that people can live 5, 10, 15, 20 years
right.
after their cancer diagnosis.
Right.
That means those services still have to be in place. We can't forget necessarily that someone had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly want people to kind of go back to more of a normal
right.
life.
Right.
But they still may need services specific to them. So we have to really understand what the long term needs are for people.
Could you give our listeners some tips, places they could go online to receive some of these resources, especially for some of the family members of someone who may be recently diagnosed mm-hmm. or going through recovery and treatment?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I can't say enough about the American Cancer Society.
Okay.
So they are, I go to the American Cancer Society website when I hear about a type of cancer I haven't heard of. And I'm like, what is this kind of cancer? They'll walk you through all of the steps of, you know, how does it get diagnosed? How does it get treated? What are the long-term effects? Along with, so not just the education, but they are offered their own set of resources, and then will also be kind of a warehouse for other resources. So I would definitely point
to the
American Cancer Society. And then there are a lot of organizations that also support certain kinds of cancer. So certainly, you know, the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation for Women with Breast Cancer, Movember and Zero Prostate for prostate cancer. So, you know, there are Ovarian Cancer Alliance for ovarian cancer. So I think it can also help to draw on supports from those foundations that are oriented toward being able to help people with that specific type of cancer. And then there's always the National Cancer Institute, which is, we think of it as a research institution, but it really is another place for information as well as resources. I say the other thing maybe to bring up is for people who are interested in clinical trials that may be,
right,
you know, that could be a treatment trial. It could be an exercise trial. It could be. So any research trial in the United States has to get registered on a website called clinicaltrials.gov. It's exactly that. And there a person could search for the type of clinical trial that they might be interested in. So I've certainly had people from California, Oklahoma, you know, other places across the country just entering in certain search terms.
Wow.
And then being able to get connected to different open trials.
Amazing.
That's always a way to get something that may not be available yet for some, for a condition, because we just don't know enough about it.
Right.
We don't have the right treatments.
Right. That's been a reoccurring theme throughout this series, how important, you know, it is for people to get involved with the research and how it pushes, you know, the advances that much further and quicker and at a steadier pace. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Finding Hope. Cancer Screening is a Future, available everywhere you listen to podcasts. Presented by OHSU Knight Cancer Institute. For more information on the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute, visit www.ohsu.edu/Knight-Cancer-Institute. And for more details on the Pathfinder 2 study, including eligibility requirements, visit www.ohsu.edu/Pathfinder-study.